You'll find real-life stories from women who have suffered miscarriage and infant loss in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September, Never Forsaken, God's Mercy in the Midst of Miscarriage. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or you can read an excerpt of Never Forsaken at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Never Forsaken, God's Mercy in the Midst of Miscarriage, 800-325-3040. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Thursday, September the 27th, we're going to spend some time going through listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line. The comment line is simply an answering machine. It's always on. So you can always call it if you have a show suggestion, a criticism, a question after the fact. We know that so many of our beloved on-demand listeners want to join the conversation, but you can't do so when you're listening a week or so late. Not live, but you can if you simply leave your question, comment, show suggestion, criticism, whatever it may be, at the Issues Etc. listener comment line, 618-223-8382. You can also do the same thing via email, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. We got a lot of email. We can't respond to all of it, but we do try to respond to as much of it as we can occasionally here on Issues Etc. What's first, Jeff?
Ken writes, I was disappointed to see that Ryan Anderson will appear at your upcoming Making the Case conference. Over the past year, he's led several attacks on Reformation history and thought. I understand that Ryan is a respectful intellectual in areas of great cultural importance, but we should hesitate to make bedfellows with one who so viscerally disregards that which we hold so dear. Thanks for the feedback, Ken.
Well, I disagree. I wouldn't expect Ryan Anderson, who is a faithful Roman Catholic, to do anything other than be a critic of the ideas of the Reformation. That's part of what makes such a person Catholic. Do I agree with that? No, I don't. But that doesn't mean that his other ideas should be in any way suspect. And it certainly doesn't mean that we should fail to have a common cause with him, as we do when we invite him to come and have some time at our conference to speak on our First Freedoms, to discuss the issue of the, in particular, the First Amendment and the freedoms that are recognized therein. He has thought deeply about such things. He has been trained legally for such things. He has written about them and still continues to write about them. I can think of few other people who are as expert to come and speak at our conference for our listeners there to talk about our First Freedoms. And I think in this case, his Catholicism, while, again, we disagree theologically, that's quite clear. It's not something to get completely worked up about. In this case, his Roman Catholicism is an advantage when addressing these things. I think part of that has to do with the fact that there is much in Roman Catholic theology, in particular its moral theology, that affirms, even apart from the American context, affirms things like our First Freedom. So I think he has kind of a two-barreled gun that he can bring to the table, not only his legal knowledge, but also his Roman Catholic sensibilities, which we might be able to learn something from, not with respect to things like the doctrine of justification or the sacraments, but with respect to those civil freedoms that have been recognized in our founding documents. So I think he's actually a good choice there. I can think of very few that would be better to take up that subject for our listeners. By the way, he will be but one of the speakers at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Anthony Esslin, also a Roman Catholic, will be addressing the issues of, what was Anthony Esslin going to be talking about?
He's going to
be talking
making about the case for Western civilization, which is desperately needed.
Yes, we need to not only hold on to what, for the sake of our neighbor, hold on to what has been built, but as we see it, even as we speak, crumbling around us at the highest echelons of power in the United States, the very basic ideas like what? The presumption of innocence? We need to start being able apologetically to make the case for such things, for Western civilization and the ideas and the presuppositions that underpin them. Anthony Esslin will be there. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery will be making a legal case for the resurrection of Christ. We'll also have Dr. Beverly Yonke addressing a very current issue about how the church deals with a transgender child. Pastor Chris Roseborough making the case, the basic case, for infant baptism. So there'll be a lot of good Lutheran theology represented there, as well as the ideas in the civil realm from outside of Lutheran Theology at the 2018 Issues Etc. Fall Making the Case Conference. It's in Dallas, Texas. You can register at issuesetc.org or just give us a call, 618-223-8385. It's Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas.
So if you're keeping score at home, the speaking lineup for the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference for Lutherans. You left out Dr. Mark Kaltoff of Hillsdale College and two Catholics. I know there's people that kind of...
It's 4-2.
4-2.
In Dallas.
Got them doubled.
Right. That's a good proportion.
David writes, the communion rail is almost a standard in Lutheran churches. What is the reason for this? Does this present real barriers with persons of disability? Is there any discussion about this? Thanks for the question, David.
That's a good question. I actually have contemplated the idea of whether or not it's not the rail that presents a physical barrier to people with disabilities, but maybe the stairs leading up to the rail that present a physical barrier to people with physical disabilities. I've thought about that many times. How would we solve this? We solve this in other ways by just putting in a wheelchair ramp. I think that's actually a pretty nice idea. If we have the communion rail at the top of a few steps, some of them have them down at the nave level, that is at the floor level, and then the accessibility problem is not there. What is it doing there? It is simply a handrail by which one more easily kneels to receive the Lord's Supper. Now, kneeling is not required. It's something that is a long-held practice among Lutherans to kneel in the presence of Christ's body and blood. Pastors do it at the altar. People do it when they receive the Lord's Supper. If you're unable to kneel, you're certainly free to stand. In our congregation, those who cannot approach because climbing the steps is too strenuous for them, people who are elderly or in some way infirm, we simply carry the Lord's Supper after the consecration out to them at the front rail, and then there's a group in the back as well that we commune before the rail is closed, and that's simply to maximize the surface area for people to come and commune together. But it's a place at which to kneel. That's why it's actually not a rail. It's a very long kneeler. It's a very long prayer bench is what it actually is. You see the short versions of them sometimes in the chancel for pastors when they are praying. It looks like a kneeler with a little rail in front of it, or maybe almost a little reading stand in front of it. And that's all the communion rail is in our modern usage in Lutheran churches, is just a very long version of that to accommodate more people. The one that I communed at when I was a young man was at my home congregation, Holy Cross in Dallas, Texas. And it was a circular thing. It was kind of like the bridge of the Starship Enterprise from the original series. It looked very much like that. And it had a circular kneeler that surrounded the altar. And it had an opening in the front so a pastor could come in and go out. But it's simply there. Now, if you go back into the history of the church and the practice of that place there where people commune, it gets different. The use becomes different. There are actually things that appear to be like a fence or a wall. But it's not intended to be a barrier to anything. It's intended to actually be a place of access for those who can kneel to come and kneel. And the church is always, when people cannot come to the sacrament, they always bring the sacrament to them, whether it's in the chancel or at home. When we come back from this break, we'll be going through more listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line. In about 30 minutes, we're going to start a conversation with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer, part two of a very important conversation with him. He has some interesting insights into the law always accusing apart from Christ as mediator. But in the meantime, your email and the comment line. Stay tuned for more.
Oh, the lonely days are gone. I'm coming home. Well, my baby, she wrote me a letter.
Can you remain a Christian if you stay away from church on Sunday mornings? I've written a column in the latest Issues Etc. journal titled, Why Do You Go to Church? We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Dr. Mark Seifried writes about his journey from being a Baptist seminary professor to becoming a Lutheran seminary professor. It's the free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
We're churchmen, not company men. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Our Savior Lutheran, Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin. St. John Lutheran, San Benito, Texas. Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran, Snohomish, Washington. Redeemer Lutheran, Gresham, Oregon. Bethlehem Lutheran, Fairborn, Ohio. St. John Lutheran, Springfield, Pennsylvania. Zion Lutheran, St. Labore, Nebraska. Our Savior Lutheran, Grand Rapids, Michigan. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Sherman, Illinois. Christ Lutheran, Noblesville, Indiana. Calvary Lutheran, Ray, Colorado. And Trinity Lutheran, Savannah, Georgia. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal.
If you come,
welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going through listener email, the Issues Etc. comment line. What's next, Jeff?
All right, Wilkin, you got 4 minutes. I don't know if you can do this in 4 minutes. Margaret writes, why should only pastors institute the Lord's Supper? Biblical answer, please. I have been conversing with somebody who tells me there's no biblical basis for allowing only pastors to do so. I've tried explaining many different things to them, and they still hold to their position. I found a Commission on Theology and Church Relations document for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod that explains it, but they use 1 Corinthians 4, verse 1, and the way they quote that verse is not the way it is written in any of the Bible versions I can find. So this person will just say that the document is changing words in the Bible to make their point. I really want to help them understand, but I feel like I've said everything I know, and I'm out of answers for them. Thanks for the email, Margaret.
Well, that CTCR document actually does go to the right verse. That is 1 Corinthians 4:1, read in its context, of course, because Paul is talking here as an apostle. This is right after he is chiding the Corinthians for being partisan in their loyalties to various apostles and preachers. Did Paul baptize you? Are you of Paul? Did Paul die for you? Those kinds of things. Because some are saying, I am of Paul, I am of Peter. So he's speaking in the context as an apostle, as someone who's been called by Christ directly to not only preach the gospel, but also to administer the sacraments. And this applies then, in a secondary sense, to pastors in the church. We don't have apostles anymore. We have apostles who have appointed pastors and teachers in the church. So this applies to pastors. And this is where Paul says, this is how one should regard us as servants of Christ and stewards of the mysteries of God. Moreover, it is required of a steward that they be found trustworthy. That's the operative verse here. And I think the wording that you may be stumbling over is that word mysteries of Christ. That word mysteries of Christ in Greek, they've just taken the word mysterion in Greek and transferred it over into English letters. That's where we get the word mystery. If you said that word not in Greek but in Latin, the word would be sacramentum. It would be sacrament. A sacrament is nothing more than these mysteries, these things that are revealed of Christ. So of what are pastors stewards? They are stewards of Christ's word and his sacraments. It's exactly the verse that we cite for pastors administering the Lord's Supper, that they be found faithful in their administration, their stewardship of the mysteries of Christ. This would be his word, the word of absolution, of baptism, and of the Lord's Supper. Paul also in 1 Corinthians later will speak of the Lord's Supper, not as just being kind of a free-for-all where anyone administers it, but actually he wrestles apostolic authority back from the wayward Corinthians and says, this is not how you ought to be admitting people to the Lord's Supper. So there's ample evidence there in Scripture that even at the time of Paul, he is teaching that the apostles and the pastors they would later appoint would be those who would be entrusted with the administration of the sacraments and the preaching of the word. Now, are you going to find an English translation that says stewards of the sacraments of Christ? No, you weren't. You won't, because that's a Latin word. This is simply a transliteration of a Greek word, the original Greek that the epistle is written in. So, but when you see mysteries, stewards of the mysteries of Christ, you ought to understand that to be the very sacraments that Christ instituted and gave to his church. When we come back from this break, we'll go through more of your listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line, and then Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will join us. We'll spend some time with him in our series on the law always accusing apart from Christ as mediator.
Luther had Wartburg. We have Collinsville. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Concordia Seminary St. Louis is the Lutheran Federal Credit Union Ministry of the Month. During September, if you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or if you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to Concordia Seminary. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Good for you. Good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
I hope that someone gets my message in a bottle, yeah. Message in a bottle, yeah.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going through listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line. That comment line, by the way, 618-223-8382. Here is a little on the comment line from Issues Etc.'s own Paul Harvey.
This is Harry of Arlington Heights declaring how silver the platter, with thanks to Pastors Peters and Ball for their excellent September 18 discussion on funeral eulogies. They inspired yet another approach to evangelism, used by this evangelism chairman on Saturday of the same week at St. John of Schaumburg, Illinois. The service for a longtime member, 85-year-old Grandma Harriet, was bifurcated, with pre-service wake viewing, and then a fine gospel-centered funeral service with a clean break for a foursome of eulogies followed by lunch for all in the gym. What a perfect setup for evangelism. In addition to a core of believers, there were more than that number of non-believing co-workers, neighbors, out-of-town friends, and, sad to say, many family members, close in blood, but spiritually remote. How silver the platter. Consider a composite mourner who has come to pay his respects, proving by his very presence a high degree of civil virtue. He is an esteemed head of a household who served honorably in some community, military, or other service. He knows little or nothing of the gospel, but shows his respect by his presence and participation. He has just been pre-prepped by a fine gospel-centered funeral sermon, and thereafter is uneasy in the unfamiliar surroundings. When greeted by a church member, the two become sufficiently acquainted, so a natural discussion sequence is the mutual cause of their attendance, the faith history of the deceased. That was the precise setting for Harriet's funeral service here at St. John on Saturday. Both during the pre-service wake-like hour in the church foyer, where the crowd took turns viewing the deceased, signing the memorial book and milling around, and at the luncheon in the gym, I went from person to person and group to group, lingering and lunching with one unchurched mourner after another. Discussions, which steered always to and usually reached the gospel, included a Florida mechanical engineer, an immigrant from Guatemala, a grandson from Maryland, a law student from Ohio, a bus driver, a college math student, a young man aspiring to be a law enforcement officer, a veteran of the Kuwait War, another veteran who had been in Iraq twice, and a dozen near neighbors. Ears perked. As I said, the Lutheran Public Radio Charter was signed at St. John 10 years ago as a prelude to lauding the quality and extent of its outreach. I gave them a card with the details. For the pervasive presence of Roman Catholic backgrounds, my wallet has a perpetual reserve of two-sided slips with 5 agreements and disagreements with Lutheranism that often go right into the wallet of a listener for future evaluation. For the Great Commission, the mission is clear. For our local church, this is our responsibility. For the unchurched mourner, this is fulfillment of a general expectation upon his election to attend. For the family of the deceased, this is a validation of the faith of the one being memorialized. And for the deceased, this is a recruitment among those who cared enough for her to attend that they might once again be a guest, not for her as at the funeral, but with her at the great banquet of Revelation. I await my next funeral opportunity and recommend you do so as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Harry. Thanks for listening there in Arlington Heights. I like the phrase he used there, and it kind of summarizes the conversation he was referencing that we had recently in our series on pastors and their people. We were discussing the issue of whether or not there should be eulogies when requested from the family members and by family members during a funeral service. And he talked about how often the people who gather for a funeral are, what did Harry say? He said, close in blood, but spiritually remote. That's a good insight, because what you do have gathered is a very mixed bag of people who are drawn together by their affection for, or their knowledge and love for the deceased, but they may be spiritually remote, close in blood, but spiritually remote. One of the great insights from that conversation he was talking about with Pastor Ben Ball and Pastor Larry Peters was that the church needs to be careful. We started out talking about expectations. The church needs to be careful not to cater to the expectations of unbelievers when burying Christians. The expectations of the world are there. The expectations of unbelievers are there about what a funeral ought to be. Well, the church ought to have its own expectations, those affirmed by the person who has died in Christ, not say, well, the world expects us to have a eulogy, therefore we probably should have a eulogy. Though that is an unbelieving expectation. We're there to preach the gospel in Christ's resurrection, law and gospel to everyone in attendance, regardless of how spiritually remote they may be at the time. Thank you very much for your comment.
This comes from Gordon in Austin, Texas. As someone who is studying Lutheranism, and he's talking about the disaster relief efforts, an interview we did with President Harrison of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod about Hurricane Florence. As someone who is studying Lutheranism, I thought you guys believe in two kingdoms. I thought the church was in the right-hand kingdom. Isn't that supposed to preach the gospel and minister the sacraments? Why the disaster response? Thanks for the email, and thanks for listening in Austin, Texas, Gordon.
Well, let me clarify your understanding of the two kingdoms. When we talk about the two kingdoms, this is not some sort of radically dual existence that the church and Christians exist only over here in this kingdom and everyone else exists. It's not a distinction between a kingdom of believers and a kingdom of unbelievers. It's a distinction between the right-hand kingdom where God rules in his church, that is with unbelievers only, through his word and sacraments to the end of forgiveness, life, and salvation for all who believe. In the right-hand kingdom, God rules. He's still there. He rules through different means, that is through law and force, and he rules to a different end, which is simply civil order and peace. The Christian occupies both kingdoms simultaneously. He doesn't have a switch on his stomach where he can switch over to the right-hand kingdom, and then when it's convenient to him, switch over to the left-hand kingdom. No, he occupies both at the same time, all the time, both right and left-hand kingdom. And that explains why Christians who are called by the gospel into that right-hand kingdom are also called into the left-hand kingdom to love and serve their neighbor. That's why we do disaster relief efforts, because we do live simultaneously as Christians in both God's right-hand and left-hand kingdom. There are unbelievers there who not only need to hear the gospel, they need someone to help them muck out their house when a hurricane sweeps through town. And we are called to do both of those things precisely because we are citizens of the right-hand kingdom and we are, in a sense, strangers and immigrants to the left-hand kingdom. But we're called to exist in both at exactly the same time. I should point out that because we were talking to the president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, he was not saying that the whole effort of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is somehow geared toward disaster relief. It's simply one of the things that the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod does together as congregations. They gather together their resources and their money to help those who are in need in time of disaster, because we have the, I think the term they like to use is capacity. We have the ability to do it. We have the resources to do it. God has called us to spend those resources wherever the need is greatest. So there's no conflict there whatsoever. It's actually a really good living out and expression of Christians living in the two kingdoms.
We get this question quite often, but I don't know if we've ever answered it during listener email in the Issues Etc. comment line. Rebecca says, can you please tell me the title of the music that plays at the beginning of the live segment? Now, since very few people listen live, here's what it sounds like.
That is, by the way, a brass version of A Mighty Fortress Is Our God. That's just our music that basically tells our affiliates that we're there. When we turn on the streamer, or when they pick up our signal, that we're feeding them something. And our guests, we do that also for our guests when we're recording off the live broadcast. We just feed it over to them so that they know we're here. They're not listening to silence. It's there. It's been there since we came back in 2008. That's been our, what do we call that?
Craig has it listed as A Mighty Fortress 4 minutes, A Mighty Fortress 3 minutes, and A Mighty Fortress bump music. So there's three different options.
Okay.
But I think I'm assuming the listener knew it was A Mighty Fortress.
They want to know what's
who,
the arrangement.
Yes. So here it is. So I'm sure I will never get another email ever.
By the way, I originally found this piece, loved it, and then forgot what it was.
So. Yes. Yeah. We've searched for it. I remember searching for this. It is A Mighty Fortress by, drumroll please, the Westward Brass Quintet. Yes, indeed. The Westward Brass Quintet. So there you go.
So if you want that version for you, for yourself, for your own listening pleasure, it's actually a rather long version. And I chose it because it was a very long version and kind of an unusual version, too. It doesn't do, it isn't your typical rah-rah, sis-boom-ba version, kind of marching band version of Mighty Fortress that you usually hear. It's actually kind of slow. It has some variations in there. It's a pretty interesting piece of music, in fact, for what I consider to be one of the most overrated and overplayed Lutheran hymns ever. Sorry.
I'm not touching that one. Thanks, because I'm the one that gets the talk back at issuesetc.org email.
I'm happy to explain why I would make that statement.
Okay. Let's see. Pastor Lieneman writes, I am a pastor in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, but a regular listener of Issues Etc. I just wanted to thank you for the great and interesting shows you put together. I listen via podcast. Keep up the great work.
That's very nice to hear, and we're always happy to have Lutherans of all stripes listening. Lutherans, actually, people say, you all, your audience is only Lutheran. No, it isn't. It's actually a very broad group of people, including we have Mormons and atheists occasionally who like to listen as well. But it's nice to have someone from the other side of the Lutheran fence here in America listening as well.
And I think it's only appropriate that we shall wrap up listener email in the Issues Etc. comment line with this succinct email from Becky. Hooray, no pop-up bats.
Did we get that fixed finally?
Yes, it is fixed.
All right. I want to say before we take our break, we have recently taken ownership of Worldview Everlasting's video channel. We've done that because Worldview Everlasting as a entity, a nonprofit entity, has disbanded, and they were kind of farming out their various assets. And one of the assets they wanted us to take control of was their video channel. For those of you who may be concerned, we just posted a video there this afternoon that promotes our conference coming up in Dallas in the first weeks of November. And if you're concerned that we're going to mess with any of the content there, if we're going to take any down, we're not. The whole purpose of us taking ownership of Worldview Everlasting's YouTube channel is to keep the content up and available and free for people there. So if anybody's a little concerned, you'll occasionally get something from us, but more or less it's going to be an archive of Worldview Everlasting and all the efforts that they did in the time that they existed. When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. It'll be part two of a series with him on the law always accusing apart from Christ as mediator. We'll do a little review and we'll answer a very important question. That is, what does it mean that the law accuses? Stay tuned. Can you remain a Christian if you stay away from church on Sunday mornings? I've written a column in the latest Issues Etc. journal titled, Why Do You Go to Church? We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Dr. Mark Seifried writes about his journey from being a Baptist seminary professor to becoming a Lutheran seminary professor. It's the free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
Do you find yourself fixing the theology on store-bought greeting cards when you give them to friends and family? Put away that Sharpie. EdGruesome.com has greeting cards, art, jewelry, certificates, church banners, housewares, and all sorts of fantastic gifts that proclaim Christ crucified for us. Whether you're a value shopper or a collector, you'll find something at EdGruesome.com. That's ADCRUCEM.com.
Lutheranism in the public square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.